You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Tonight on the Cooligans, soccer is here. Soccer's back. We can actually talk about the sport that we love so much.
Wow. We're back to talking about soccer. And it's not just that, dude. We also got Mo Adams on the show.
Oh, okay. Of Atlanta United? That's pretty nice.
You know how we do, right? We said we're going to bring you stars. Baby, we bring you stars. And also, we brought soccer back.
Okay. It was all us, all right? So all this and more today on the
Cooligans!
Hi, this is Ashlyn Harris
and Allie Krieger, and you are listening to our best friends and favorite comedians,
the Cooligans, bitch.
Yeah, baby! Bundesliga!
Yeah! Look at this.
What? Can you believe soccer is actually back?
I cannot.
No.
It's difficult to fathom, given it's been, I think, what was the last soccer match? I think it was like March 13th or 14th. I think that was the last like week, I think, in Europe.
What was physically the last one you went to was the CONCACAF match in Jersey, right?
Yeah. The Rebel Arena, the NYCFC against Tigres. NYCFC gave up a late goal to lose 1-0, and it was not the way I wanted soccer to leave me. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Odd way to put it.
Okay. How are you going to hurt me like that, babe?
Yeah. Well, the last one I went to was the CONCACAF match in Costa Rica. And by the way, if you don't know who we are, we're the Cooligans.
That was good, everybody.
We're just too excited about soccer being back. You know what I mean?
We're too happy. My name is Christian Polanco.
That's right. I'm Alexis Guerreros.
All right. We are the Cooligans. We are your favorite stand-up comedians that host the funniest soccer show and the happiest soccer show because soccer is back.
All right. Who's more elated than us? Nobody besides some German podcast. And you know that ain't funny. Okay. Absolutely. Dude, this is exciting. And by the way, we're not just the funniest. We're also the gulliest. So,
okay.
Find another one. I dare you to find another one
in Germany.
So you saw that, which we call Premier League is like, yo, we're also going to start training. They saw the ratings for Bundesliga and they're like, by the way, we're going to, they all of a sudden become right wing. They're like, guys, we got herd immunity. Okay. We need to get out there. So we lose a couple players, right? With the ratings.
Okay. Look, they'll probably be on the bench anyway. All right. The strong ones are going to survive.
They run a lot. Good lungs. It affects your lungs. Just let them out there.
So, man, there's a lot to be, it was actually a little bit controversial, right? Because some people were like, Bundesliga is back, but without fans, this isn't even football and this isn't soccer. What is all this
and
about?
I get it. I get when people like Ellie Mengen put like, this doesn't feel like football. No, it doesn't. But you know what? It's close enough. Okay. Right. Like, right. You know, like, imagine like there was like a huge STD outbreak and no one could have sex. And they're like, well, maybe you can with condoms. I got to be honest, might be good enough for now. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Okay.
I'll settle for this.
You know, I think I can deal, you know, for a little bit. We'll figure out as we go along. But for right now, this seems okay.
Exactly. So, it did feel, you know, especially the first match, the majority of the matches kicked off on Saturday, May 16th, at 9:30 a.m. Eastern time. And the majority of people probably watched the Revier Derby between Schalke and Dortmund. And
but two teams were there?
Two teams.
I really only saw one show up.
Correct. Yeah, it's a fair assessment. The majority of people probably watched that game. And being, you know, watching a game at Signal Iduna Park and without the yellow wall, it feels like something is actually very seriously missing. It feels like something is wrong.
You know what? I spent most of the day, most Saturday and Sunday, because I watched games both days because I was not saying no to soccer. I spent the whole time going, huh, that's what their seats look like. I spent the whole time. Oh, yeah. Oh, that, yeah. Ooh, that's a good angle. Yeah, I did a lot of that.
Some of the stadiums they had like different so they had like plush dolls, they had like cards and
some of them had in the Korean League they definitely went dolls. Just different. Where did they find so many? That's a question I have.
We'll get into that. We have to talk about Germany more, but I do want to talk about that. But the fact that no fans were there was definitely jarring and a bit strange. But honestly, after like the first, like, I don't know, 15 minutes, I was like, yo, this is, yeah, it's still competitive.
It's soccer.
They didn't lose their quality because the fans are not there. Like,
hold on a second. There was some rustiness for sure. There was some wild passes. There was some back heels to nobody. At one point, someone on Schalke passed to the sideline, like the coach on the sideline, because he's wearing a blue shirt. I'm not even making that up. I mean,
So I'll say this, because I think when it comes to Bundesliga, that's a normal game. I don't think it's not to trash Bundesliga.
I think you're wrong. Bundesliga has incredible.
There was, of course, rust, but it wasn't like embarrassing. That's all I'm saying.
There were some moments.
Look, the Cologne Mainz match, that was like, rust plus these are teams on at the end, at the bottom of the table. That's what
Norwich versus Bayern, Southampton.
Bayern look fine.
Bayern was like, no, we got this. Alfonso Davies also looked really good too, which was nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Americans, like Gio Reyna starting, and everyone's like, we live tweeted the match. Right? I was like, yo, I see Gio Reyna is gonna start, and we're like, yo, is lit. I put like, yo, Americans, start drinking, it's our time, right? I put my phone down, I make myself a coffee on the stovetop, 4 minutes total, I take a sip and I go, ah, and I look at my phone, Gio Reyna out, and I'm like, what the fuck happened in the time in which I was making a coffee? What could he have possibly done?
Yeah, unfortunate, right? Gio Reyna gets injured during warm-ups, warming up a little too hard, a little too aggressive, too excited to be back, you know what I mean?
Damn, it's called a warm-up, not a hot-up.
So, yeah, it sucks because we wanted to see Gio Reyna against Weston McKennie. We wanted to see
Gio Reyna do anything.
It'd be nice, yeah. Especially since he was supposed to, this summer, the international matches for the U.S. were supposed to happen that were going to be in Europe. They were going to be against I think it was like not France or Italy, Netherlands and somebody else. So we were going to see the new blood, like we're gonna see Gio Reyna in there. Yeah. Obviously Serginho Dest and everybody. We were gonna see what the future of the U.S. men's national team was gonna look like and all this other stuff. And and then people were making jokes about Gio Reyna being exactly, just like his father.
Oh, Matt Doyle crushed it. He put, all you kids get to see what it was like to be a fan of Claudio Reyna, because apparently he would get injured during really important matches as well. So shouts to, hey, look, apple trees make apples. You know what I mean?
So look, obviously, it really, really amazing for soccer to be back and see professional matches. And we're excited to see more of it. I mean, we were on Twitch calling the game between Eintracht Frankfurt and Mönchengladbach. And we're going to be doing more of that. So,
we got Mo Adams coming up.
And yeah, we got Mo Adams coming up. So
right now, actually. Well, right after this.
So. We'll be back with Mo.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to the episode. I just want to break in with a word from one of our sponsors, us and you and the family we've now created around us, Gully Squad.
Exactly. And we want to give a shout out to Kyle Knight. He has been a fan of the show for a long time and very much part of the Cooligans family. And we're going to want to give him a shout out because his father just passed away, Roger. And it's, there's something, we talk about this often. that Gully Squad is very much feeling like very much like a family nowadays, and more, especially with we're all quarantined, we're all dealing with stuff. When my grandfather passed a month ago, everyone sent so many kind words to me that was very uplifting, and we want to just give that right back to Kyle, because you know, it's obviously not easy in times like these.
Yeah, it's very difficult, especially in moments like this, like what you experience where you can't go visit family. But, you know, people have been finding ways online to sort of connect with other human beings and to sort of fill that gap. And as soon as he posted about it in Gully Squad, in our Slack, you know, there was a rush of condolences being sent. And it's funny, it doesn't feel like a family because there's hasn't really been that many arguments and stuff, you know, Gully Squad. Like, it feels almost like a really cool group home, you know, where like like a bunch of weird dudes who just and weird kids and all together, just everyone just who loves soccer and really want to be progressive and just want to be like good people and just want to hang out and be positive about the sport in America, come hang out. And then there's moments like of this, you know, we're not roasting pizza, or I'm not shitting on pizza, or we're not roasting each other's teams. It's just a moment like this where the humanity and the human side of things like podcast listeners sort of, you know, rears its head. And it's amazing to see how everyone jumped to support Kyle. And I want to make sure that I say this as well. Rest in peace to Roger Knight, Mr. Roger Knight, I should say, who from all accounts was a wonderful human being, loved the game of soccer, was a youth coach, played in high school himself, and really begat other soccer fans. And it's people like that that were sort of what created the fans of today for the most part. And it's wonderful to see the reaction, and it's unfortunate that something like this had to happen. So my heart and our heart goes out to Kyle and the Knight family.
Yeah, and all we can do is, you know, hopefully we can keep that memory going forward, and maybe we can create more fans of soccer, or make fans of soccer care about the game more deeply. Probably it was similar to what Roger did. So, you know, we could have Cooligans babies and who love soccer and go on to win the World Cup all because of us. Who knows? Yeah.
And just like him, you know what? He didn't, from all accounts, from what Kyle said, he didn't go out and make plans for his death. He went out and lived his life after he found out that he was sick. And you know what? That's the best advice that we could all do, is go out, live life, and just like he, be gully as fuck. All right, baby, we're back. And finally here with our guest. Oh,
correct.
Man.
Correct. Yes.
This is exciting.
Very right. much so. All right. I mean, we've gone through this whole, you know, quarantine this last couple months without anyone representing Atlanta United, which is quite a shame.
Right, which much to the I guess the beguilement of people who leave reviews on our show saying we only talk about Atlanta United or LAFC. Well, maybe y'all team should win a little. All right, stop being bums, and maybe we'll talk about your squad. But this dude, all the way from England, from Nottingham, all right, which I thought was just in books. I don't know that was for real. Right? I thought that was just children's stories, but turns out it's real. And this dude has done a lot in his career. Right now, he plays for Atlanta United, but in the past, he's played for Boston United. So he started his career right here in the Northeast, right in America. Right?
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it was a different Boston United. Went to Reading, Chicago Fire for a hot minute, where he got to hang out with our homie, DJ Step. And now he's playing for Atlanta United. Ladies and gentlemen, unless you're driving, put your hands together for the one, the only, the perfectly faded haircut of man like Mo Adams.
Appreciate it. What an introduction, man. Thank you so much. But you know, thank you for representing with rocking the England tea. I appreciate that.
Right? I had to do it. I heard you were coming on, and I happened to get one that fits my slightly bigger frame. You know what I mean? Some of y'all Europeans come in some smaller sizes than we do here in America.
Yeah. I'm looking at your haircut, and I'm like, the envy, the jealousy is really, you know, it's not even about, you know, your athletic ability, your physical
it's just successes you've had.
It's just a fade right there.
It's just the perks of having a friend that cuts hair, you know? They just sort you out whenever you need.
My wife at one point was like, let me try the fade. I was like, if you come near my hair with that buzzer, it's over.
All right, Mo. So thank you so much for joining us, man. I guess the first question is, this is the first time we've had a player since since training began, since those individual workouts began in Major League Soccer. How does it all work? How excited are you to be back?
And how hard is it to slide tackle 6 feet away from another player?
Yeah, very tough, very tough. No, I'm absolutely excited, very thrilled to kind of get back in the role of things. It's been a while since we've seen our teammates and kind of got involved within the training facility. But it's very structured, like you said. The moment we kind of enter the training ground, there's a kind of member of staff who gives us like a designated parking spot. And we have to stay in the car with our masks and our gloves on. And each player has to do that until their name's called. And then you get escorted basically to the front of the training facility. They check your weight, check your temperature, all that stuff. And then they kind of escort you to a part of a field where you kind of remain for the whole session. So like I said, it's not ideal. You're not allowed to pass a ball to your teammate and stuff like that. But we're just trying to get as much as we can in during this time. But more importantly, it's good to see the guys, see the coaching staff too. So it's fun to, get out of the living room. I think I've had enough of the Zoom calls right now when you're sitting on the bike and doing pickups in your living room, trying not to break anything. So it's good to get out.
So you can't really communicate with your teammates and you can't pass them the ball. So it's cool that we're using the slots on Ibrahimovic rules.
pretty much.
Okay.
Stay in your car until you're ready to train. Right. These are all the slots on rules.
Yeah. Every shot taken is from the middle of the field.
I don't know if we score as much as him, but yeah, we try.
Now, and everyone should know, we're recording this a week early, so things may have changed a week from now when everyone's watching or listening to this. But for the most part, the sort of training is reopened. And it just, after a long time of just training in your house, apartment, just in your own flat, if you will, it's got to be nice. I got you, baby. It's got to be nice just to sort of just even see other players, even if you have to yell like, how you doing, whatever it is. It must be nice to get to some little bit of familiarity.
No, 100%. Like I said, even though we're not physically in contact with each other, it's good to kind of see someone working out besides you, pushing you. Maybe sometimes we're doing a bit of runs and you kind of want to keep up with the guy who's kind of leading, whatnot. So it's definitely great. It's good to get out of the house, of course, but it's finally the start of, kind of seeing the light at the end of the tunnel right now, instead of literally just being stuck in the house, being told not to go outside, not to do anything like that. So just to be back on the field, see the guys train, compete even in some way, it's what we all want.
And to talk about Atlanta United a little bit, you are new to the team. What was it like when you found out when you were going to go to Atlanta United? I know when we obviously started covering the team and started going there, and obviously the fan base is unreal. It's like the fact that it was a new team with that kind of support was surreal. But they really show a lot of love to their players, even if you've been there for 15 minutes or whatever. So what's it been like since you've been in Atlanta United member?
It's been incredible. I kind of knew I was gonna get traded during that transfer window. There's been talks of clubs, whatever, but when I found out it was Atlanta United, I was over the moon. I think that's one place you kind of want to go to, of course. And thankfully for me, I was able to make my debut the following day after I had signed. I've played in Atlanta before, and it's different when you come in as an opposing player than when you actually play for them. And, of course, it's an intimidating atmosphere, but when you actually play for Atlanta, you've got this whole fan base, the whole crowd behind you, and you actually realize how noisy it is. It's like a 12th man, right? It's like you've got an advantage. Huh. And I remember when I was stepping on the field to make my debut, the whole crowd is just like chanting my name and stuff. I was like, this is wild. This is how you guys do it, right?
I'm like, what? Yeah, so, you already got a song for me?
I
just got here.
it was super dope. I really enjoyed it. And thankfully, of course, we're looking back to get in the swing of things, and hopefully we'll be able to play in front of the crowds, hopefully anytime soon. But it's a different atmosphere, man, to anywhere I've played.
How different is it for you to play potentially games in front of closed doors? Normally when that happens in Europe, it's because something bad happened and the team isn't allowed to have fans. Yeah. The fans got a little rowdy, what I mean? But now it's a different situation. Talking about Atlanta, they get 74,000 fans to some of the games. Potentially no fans at some of these matches. What's that going to be like for you? Is that something you guys are talking a little bit about, sort of the difference, or you think it's not really going to have an effect on the players?
I think it does have an effect on the players in some way. I think any time, for us, it's obviously a big advantage for us to play in Atlanta, in front of our crowd. I don't think, any opposition team would like for that to happen, to come and play us on our home turf. But in terms of the effect it would have on the players, some way, I think sometimes maybe the game doesn't seem as competitive. It may seem like a preseason scrimmage,
Oh, yeah.
But I think we have to understand that, hey, like, this is the reality right now. This is what we have to do. And, when the ball gets rolling, it's just back to business, really. I think it's going to affect the crowds, maybe, or the fan base more so than it'll affect the players, because football, soccer is our job, Like, we're just trying to get to do what we do. And after not competing for a while, I think, we'll take it any way it comes.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because, like, it feels like we've seen matches without crowds, and there must be something that hurts your ego without anyone watching you be the best footballers in the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like doing stand up without an audience. Feel like we're actually doing our job.
The credit, maybe.
It's also weird to hear the players talk to each other. They're like, "Yo, good job. Yo, how's your mother doing?" You're like, "No, we ain't supposed to hear this."
Yeah, or if you get yelled by the coach, yeah.
Now, Mo, you spent quite a bit of time in America. I know you sort of went from Boston United, Reading to Chicago Fire, but you did spend some time at Syracuse. But one of the things, when I looked up a little bit about your career, one of the things that stood out, it said that you had made an appearance off the bench for Boston United against, I want to say, Solihull Moors, right? And yeah. Adams also featured twice for the under-21s, including an 11-1 win over Norktown. All right, now, I know this is a different Newark. All right? Yeah. I grew up in Newark, New Jersey, okay? Famous for New Jersey Drive, so, carjacking capital of the world. You beat Norktown. What is Norktown like? I just need to know for personal reasons.
No. Just to clarify, this was like all these clubs, Boston United and everything, was back in England. So we have a version of everything in the US.
Of course.
In our entire version, right?
You copied us.
We copied
right?
you guys.
We were the original, clearly.
Exactly.
We like to consider it like y'all are like Yahoo, and we're Google.
So you guys are the updated version. Yeah.
Yeah, y'all were original, right? But we took Norktown and we upgraded. Rated it. Yeah. We made Nork into top boy.
It is what it is right now, huh? Yeah. No, I think anytime you play against someone and beat them 11-1, it's a memorable game. It's a very fun one, I think. But in terms of the town itself, not great, I'll be honest. we're just there to get stuff done, and we're trying to get out.
Pretty
as
similar.
As
pretty similar then. Yeah.
It was such a bad. It was such a bad number, 11-1. I was like, it hurt me, and I ain't even from Norktown.
It hurt us more than a scoring one, even. I think when you kind of beat a team 11,
but Newark, New Jersey is. Though. Newark, New Jersey is the 11-1 of cities, if you know what I mean. You know what I'm saying?
Damn right. And we're proud of it.
There you go.
There's only two Newark towns. Anyway, so, but talk about a little bit about your youth career, sort of coming up a little bit in the youth system in England. And then what was it like to make the transition to America? We've talked a little bit about this with Jack Harrison, who was at the Manchester United Academy and then switched to a high school here in the US. What was that switch like? What's the difference in soccer? What adjustments did you have to make?
Adjustments are different, of course. I think there's a misconception in the UK that if you go to university, you're kind of giving up on football, right? So, because in the UK, you can only take one route, the football route or the education side. There's no way of kind of doing both together. So when I first heard of this opportunity to go to the States, because I was close to signing a professional contract with Blackburn Rovers, but due to injury, it got taken away from me. And I heard about, going to the US on a scholarship. And I just thought it was, you're going for education and football was a bonus. Maybe it's not as competitive as someone might think. But after doing a lot of research and seeing guys before me like Jack Harrison and Dom Dwyer and all these guys, and to see what they've carved out, from the opportunities they had over there, kind of opened my eyes. And after doing a lot of research, I figured out I wanted to play in the ACC, which was, one of the most competitive conferences, of course. I played a showcase game, got a lot of offers from universities. And that's when I actually reached out to Kristen. I was like, hey, man, like, do you know much about universities in the US? If so, like, where's good to go? Like, and then I committed to Syracuse, and I didn't really know much about the States and how big the country is in itself. Because when you're in England, you're in this small bubble where you can go from top to bottom in the space of like a 5-hour drive. So I'm thinking, yeah, I'm Syracuse has called New York's college team. I'm thinking I'm about to walk past the Empire State to go to class. You know, like,
yo, what's up, Jay-Z? I'm all up to soccer, bro.
Yo, you dap up the Statue of Liberty, and then you get to class.
That's how I thought it was done, right? But when I realized I was 4 hours north of New York City, I was like, damn, and with the cold and everything. But, you know, I was fortunate enough to attend a good university, play for a good team, and, you know, do what I had to do over there in order to get me to where I am now.
You were essentially in our Scotland.
Basically. I was that high up, right? Yeah.
And we don't understand that. You know?
No. Different lingo.
What is, as far as college soccer, isn't, you know, I don't definitely watch too much of it outside of like the national like championship games, but isn't the schedule really strange and like things are like weirdly compact? Like what is it like just day to day being a college soccer player?
Yeah, it's different because, you know, like, yeah, when I was playing in academy, for example, at Derby County, I would go in at like 9 o'clock and I'd be out the door by trainings, let's say like 11, I'd be out the door by 2 o'clock. So it's not an extremely long day, right? But when you go to college, you realize, okay, maybe you have a lecture at 8 a.m. and then you have a bunch of classes that will take you up to 2 o'clock, and then you have to grab food quickly. You have training at 3:30 to 5, and then you have tutoring, and then you have some homework to do. So it was, that part of it was kind of stressful in some way, because with such a condensed season, I think it's a 3-month season, and then you can play maybe 18 games if you have a really good season, including all the playoffs and the conference games, and if you go to national tournament and stuff. So I think having to balance and have that time management of understanding that you're there to play soccer, but at the same time you are a student and you do have, you know, obligations of completing homework on time and all that kind of stuff, maybe, you know, studying for a final. So that was kind of tough for me, because all I knew was in England was kick a soccer ball, go home and have some fun, you know?
Yeah, algebra. Yeah. What's all this?
Exactly. Like, this ain't my type of thing, you know?
I don't need a diagram of sense. I need to learn how to count my money.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do the college soccer players get as much respect as some of the other athletes in the other sports? Because I know in England you're a footballer and you're an academy. Yeah. I'm sure you get respect on anywhere you go.
No, of course.
But then all of a sudden a linebacker shows up who's 6'5", 300 pounds, and runs just a 4'4".
And
four.
Yeah, and
you're
like, just walk by you, right?
Yeah, exactly. I don't need to know who I am.
I think that was kind of evident when I was on my visit, and then I was lining up to go into the bars, right? And I see all these like tall ass like football, basketball players just dab off the bouncer and walk in, and I'm just like, are we supposed to walk in, or are we just like waiting to get like our IDs checked?
You tuck in behind the linebacker?
Yeah, I'm like, yeah. Trying to sneak in.
Yeah.
You know?
That's
block
my
for me, dude. Block
that's
for me.
That's my fullback. He's good. Yeah. He can come in.
I mean, of course, Syracuse is a huge, you know, basketball school. They've got, you know, great history and stuff like that. And for us, it was, I think the fact that the soccer team was good and we were consistently going in far in the national tournaments and stuff like that, we kind of got the respect. And for me, thankfully, you know, I was able to win like the school rookie of the year. So that kind of got me some respect. And I managed to win the bars for free, you know, after that. So
there you go.
There's a
reward. Carry that trophy around with you.
Exactly.
You're like, oh, what do you mean it's extra for guacamole?
Look at this trophy.
Yeah, what'd you say now, though?
Put the guac in the trophy. Yeah, we're good.
Yeah.
I remember we did meet you very briefly while you were with Chicago Fire. We met you at the draft, I believe a year or two prior. You were shaking hands, kissing babies, the whole thing. You were doing
exactly.
Who are these babies?
But I'm curious about your time with the Chicago Fire. You were drafted by them. Chicago is just like a very interesting club, because just obviously the stuff that was going on off the field and the difficulties were obviously where they were going to play, and obviously they moved to Soldier Field. Being a part of a club like the supporters for Chicago Fire are some of the most deeply passionate people. I know people get frustrated at, like, you know, Bridgeview wasn't always full, but the people the supporters for Chicago Fire were just incredibly passionate about the club. So what was
You have to care to go to Bridgeview, right?
Yeah, without
if you're going to make that drive, you know, you got to be passionate about it, for sure.
So being a part of the Chicago Fire, even with like some of the drama, what was the experience like with the team?
No, I thought, you know, I loved my time in Chicago. And if you would have told me, you know, when I was in England 2 years from now, when I thought my dream was over in England, that 2 years from then I'd be playing in one of the best cities in the world for Chicago Fire and MLS alongside one of the greats of all time, Bastian Schweinsteiger, I would have told you to do one, you know, like for me, it was, yeah, for me, like, you know, being drafted in Chicago and then going in, you know, they took me in with open arms, I think. And they're very passionate about their team, of course. You know, they've got a great tradition and passion. The club was extremely successful in the past, of course. But they stuck by us. You know, I'm not going to lie. We weren't a great team at times. You know, we missed out on the playoffs for consecutive seasons. But they never kind of, you know, looked down on us or kind of gave up hope, I think. And they're extremely loyal. And, you know, I remember when I got traded, the messages and the support that I got from them. And I still do, you know, I still keep in contact with some fans. And I think the club is heading in the right direction, of course. I think this move to Soldier Field is going to be great. You know, the stadium is pretty much downtown. You know, I think going all the way to Bridgeview was tough, but, you know, the fans still made that trip, you know, in the freezing cold to support us. But, you know, I love that club. I'm not going to lie. You know, it's an amazing city, an amazing time. I spent, you know, a year and a half there that I thoroughly enjoyed. And, you know, I'm excited to see what they do. And I think, you know, they've got a bright future right now, definitely.
When you get drafted and you play for a club like Chicago, who, yeah, I mean, we've talked a little bit about some of the struggles with the stands, but the folks that are there are supremely passionate. Chicago is also just a wonderful city. Personally, I think the only other real city in America besides New York, if you think of cities, the way a city is, every other city in America seems to me like it's a collection of towns. But being in a city like Chicago, playing for a team like Chicago Fire, now going to a city like Atlanta with that support, having scored your first ever goal at LAFC or against LAFC, seeing how that club is supported and just how different soccer is in America than what you thought it might have been growing up in England. If someone were to come to you in the same position you were in and say, hey, I don't know if it's working out at this academy or I'm not sure what's going to happen or I got injured. Like I see this YouTube channel called Rising Ballers where like these kids had professional contracts and now they're playing on YouTube. And I'm like, what are you talking about? What would you say to these kids? Do you think the route you took is as effective, or do you think it was special because it was you?
No, I don't think it was special because it was me. I do think there's some sort of level of sacrifice and resilience you do have to show. And if you don't show that type of, you know, attitude, that type of, you know, have that driven mentality, you're not going to make it. You know, I see, you know, I was in academy with all these guys who were like high prospects. I mean, when I was at Derby County, I played against, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Marcus Rashford, Mason Mount, Tammy Abraham, like week in, week out, Dele Alli. So for me, like it could go one way or it could go a complete opposite way. You know, I had guys in my team who were like playing for the youth national teams and now they're just kind of working at a grocery store, you know, so it could literally go either way. And for me, it was just a case of I didn't want to take that risk of dropping to like the sixth division of the English tier to have to work my way back up because it's extremely different over there. Everybody looks at Jamie Vardy and see like what he's done from non-league to the Premier League. But in all honesty, it's kind of a one in a million chance for everyone to do that, you know? But
yeah, and he won the Premier League.
As an Arsenal fan, could we not bring it up? Okay. Yeah.
Just like one in a billion, maybe.
Yeah.
No, but like I said, you know, having a chance to have a backup plan at university with a degree if soccer didn't go the way I wanted to do was having that kind of safety net that allowed you to just put everything in terms of soccer. But eventually, if that doesn't work, you still leave with something. But no, I tell the guys, you know, it's the best decision I've ever made to come to the US, and I thoroughly love it over here. You know, I'm enjoying it completely. And I still like, you know, I'm still like communicating with all these kids. I get like hundreds of DMs from people, you know, saying, oh my God, like the US, how does it work? I'm thinking of going, but I don't know if that, you know, if it's right for me and stuff like that. And I make sure I respond to every single one of them because I know when I was hurt and I didn't know what to do next, I was reaching out to all these clubs and no one gave a damn, to be honest. No one replied, no one responded. So I understand what it's like to not have answers, you know? So I make sure that I respond to every single kid, every single person who has a question in regards to the route that I took and just give advice, you know, because it's not going to cost you a thing, but it's going to help people in the long run.
That's Mo, amazing.
How do Christian and I get in on this, right? We'll go into third with you. How do we sign these kids and bring them over to America? What do we need to do to start making some of this money?
See, hold on. But when Alexis, Yeah, but when Alexis asks this question, it feels a little too much like trafficking human beings. It doesn't really sound like he cares.
Look, we'll get a shipping container. We'll put a couple computer chairs in there. Exactly. Next thing you know, we got a bunch of squads here.
And then we got a business, right? Yeah.
We'll put them all up in Newark. You know what I mean? We'll be good.
It's interesting because at least, like, I mean, it is amazing that you take the time to do that, because there's in almost every facet of life, people, you know, younger people need support and understanding of like what they're kind of getting into. As far as when you compare what either youth systems or what just like the growth of the sport or the growth of your ability in compared to England and the US, it's like were there things that were like that you noticed immediately, like, oh man, we do this better in England, whatever that particular thing was, as far as like creating better soccer players?
I think the training for sure. It's I think, you know, training in the academy, you have a system that you want to play and you stick with that system throughout the whole season, regardless of if you're playing United 1 week or you're playing Chelsea. This is your system, this is your style, this is your identity, and you stick to that. Whereas if it was college, we're playing against a team with a big, you know, big back four. We're not going to keep playing long ball in that training, you know, that week. We're just going to play this type of soccer. So it was very, you know, like, we didn't have a style necessarily. It was just like, okay, we're planning for this next game. We're planning for this next game.
You adapt.
Exactly. Just adapt. Whereas in England, the whole training sessions were the same. You know, you get this plan, this pattern of play. This is how we're structured. Regardless if we play against a 4-4-2 diamond or a flat 4-4-2, we're still going to play this way. So I think that's one thing that allowed us, maybe the European players, when we come here, to be able to maybe be technically better or tactically better. But of course, you know, in college, like you said, it's a 3-month season and it's business. Yeah. You know, you just have to win as soon as possible. It's not you're not necessarily trying to push players up to the first team from the academy or stuff like that. But one thing in England is that most academies do is however the first team plays, that whole system would run through all the way through the academy.
Okay.
So that was different.
Do you think that, like, when you came to America and you started playing, like, your first impression of the American player, Syracuse being a great college for soccer, those are great players, at least for a certain, you know, I mean, within that level, right? What did you think of the level versus some of the kids that you were playing? And be honest, you know what I mean? You know, talk your talk, right? this is for the Union Jack.
Yeah, you're going to be like, yo, all these other teams are trash. Yo, Syracuse.
Right. We on the phone with your homies, like, yo, come here right now. We run shit.
Exactly.
It's free guacamole. What did you honestly think of the American player? Be dead honest.
No. I mean, the demographic and the way, you know, Americans, they seem to be so much bigger, right, than us Europeans. You know, I was playing against people who were like 6'5", and I'm like, damn, man, are you playing like soccer or basketball? Like, what is it?
You're in the wrong sport, bro.
Exactly. No, but I'll be honest, you know, it's extremely physical because, of course, you come in as a freshman and you're playing against seniors and stuff like that. And one thing that I never understood was they're like the substitutions in college. You can come on, literally sit down for 5 minutes and you can come back on. So I'm having these kids come on like with the last 5 minutes and they're full of energy and they're just chasing like crazy, you know? Whereas in England, it's like 3 subs, you know, if you're off, sit your ass down and you're coming back on, you know? So it's that's one thing.
You're like, what's in that Gatorade, my guy? Yeah. I know with things starting back up, schedules can be a little hectic, so it means a lot to us that you would come on and hang out with us. We talked a little bit about sort of your career coming up to America, getting selected. First of all, Generation Adidas, getting selected in the draft by Chicago Fire. In that moment, does it feel like sort of the decisions you made to come to America sort of worked out, or did you still think like, no, there's more to prove?
I think you always have to have the mentality there's more to prove. I think the moment you realize or you think to yourself, okay, you know, like, you know, it's a goal that was achieved in the process of me becoming the best version of myself, right? But I never thought for a moment like, okay, this is worth it now. It's a good thing I came to America, you know. I do think, you know, there's a couple of things I need to do in order to say that. I'm currently finishing off my degree, so once I graduate, I could say, okay, the whole college process was done. It was achieved. Yeah, yeah. But until that's done, I think, you know, I'm still working towards that. But no, I think you just have to stay hungry, stay humble along the way. And there's always more to strive for.
What are you majoring in?
Sport management. So business administration with like a focus in sport. So,
See? this is the perfect guy to start bringing these European kids in.
Exactly. What are you talking about? I got 200 DMs of potential clients.
That's like 1,000 each, huh?
Yeah, let's get it, yo. We'll take these kids. We'll show them what fried food should really taste like. We'll show them what pizza should really taste like. Right? Yeah. when you sort of look at some of the players like Jack Harrison have used MLS as a springboard to get back into Europe. I know you've just started your career here in the U.S., but is that something that you've looked forward to? It seems like you're really happy here in America, as you should, because we're amazing. Like, what is it? Where's your head at? What are you looking for long term?
No, like I said, I'm thoroughly enjoying my time in the U.S. I love it out here, of course. But, you know, never say never in football. You never know where your career could potentially take you. And, you know, it's a dream, of course, to play back in Europe. It's something that was so close to achieving, you know, back then. But I wasn't able to do so, unfortunately. But no, it's definitely a goal of mine, and it's something I think nowadays you see more of it. You know, players from the US going over to Europe, whether it be Alphonso Davies or Tyler Adams or, like you said, Jack Harrison. It kind of just opens the door for us, and it's become more of a trend now, which makes it very realistic for players. If they do well, you know, people are watching you.
Yeah, is it at the very least, even with that kind of track record for Major League Soccer, when the players do arrive there, like what is I guess if you can take the temperature, like what's MLS look like to Europe? You know, the jokes were always even retirement league. Even when Bastion got there, people were like, oh well, retirement, you know, whatever. I'm sure you have to deal with some of these comments, right. But it seems like
no one said that about Derby County. Derby County. I'm just saying, right? Rooney shows up looking 85 years old. No one. Is anything.
to be honest, after, you know, I think Rooney played a huge difference in getting maybe the MLS the coverage and the respect over in England, because a lot of our games were actually televised, so my family would, you know, would turn Sky Sports on and I'd be playing, so it's getting a lot more exposure over there. And I think the fact that Rooney came to MLS, did his thing, and then went back to England, to Derby County, actually, to show you, like, okay, he hasn't, like, you know, dropped in level. Like, he didn't go to the US to kind of just, you know, get a paycheck and enjoy life. He kind of, you know, it was a stepping stone of him to return here because he did so well in the US. So I think it's definitely getting more respect. The fact that the league is kind of changing from maybe getting some veteran legends to getting, like, young players, especially like Atlanta. If you look at it, you know, we have some fantastic young players, you know, for like Almiron, who was here, and now Barco and Joseph, still young, Pity Martinez, and all these players. Like, I think that what the league is transforming into a, you know, buy young, develop, and potentially sell, rather than bring them in to kind of sell tickets.
Yeah. There is clearly that change in culture. You would hope that, I mean, the problem is that we have this inferiority complex with England, and it's always you type the word soccer on the internet and you're bombarded by, you know, people can't even respect.
It's called football, mate. Yeah,
honestly, when I went back home and I was talking to my friends and I dropped the word soccer in a couple of times, they're like, you've changed, man. Like, seriously. Like, what's happening?
You're like, we don't know you, mate.
Yeah, like, who are you? Yeah, mate.
I just don't get it. There's a show called Soccer AM. Why are we the only in England?
I know. That's funny, right? Yeah. Like, it's just, like, yeah, y'all invented the word. Every Saturday. Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah, people, no one, the crowd isn't yelling, it's football AM.
It's football. I think we need to come to a conclusion, you know. I think the US and then the UK have to just negotiate it out.
I think I think it's frankly a fear. I think the friction is really just a fear that England is going to be overtaken by the strength of American soccer, and they're going to have to.
It is a threat, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah, but, well, it's just, at least this is like one of the few leagues, you know, the conceit of like Don Garber to be like, we want to be the league of choice in the world. It's like, it sounds ridiculous, but when it comes to actual growth of the sport, like soccer, you know, football is already the standard in England. It's not going to get more popular. There's no more people to get into the game. But the U.S. is a real possibility that more people can, there's so many people here that watch sports, and it could actually become bigger. There could be more soccer fans in the U.S., which I think there already are, more soccer fans that support MLS than support the Premier League, even
in England. I mean, we also have just so much more people, like,
it's
in space.
I think, you know, that the league is growing in a, such as, personally for me, I think it's the fastest growing league in the world. And of course, the ceiling is extremely high. Whether the MLS reaches that point is yet to be known, right? But of course, I think you look at Atlanta, Seattle, even LAFC, and the crowds and the passion and the style of football these teams play, and the players that they're beginning to attract is amazing, right? Because you look back 10 years ago, I remember I was watching like the Beckham experiment on TV not too long ago, and the league was completely different. Thanks to him, of course, you know, the trajectory of everything changed, and it got the league the attention it deserved, but not just in a sense of marketing and stuff like that, in a sense of football too. So soccer.
Let's not give all the credit to Beckham, because it also took Americans bringing him here. So really, it was us.
Yeah, it was you guys.
Even more with Mo Adams of Atlanta United. Speaking of Atlanta United, you're on the squad now. Talk a little bit about Frank de Boer's system, because I think it's something that it's a complete change from the system that was there before with Tata Martino. But it seems like the club and some of the players that were there and are still there are really starting to figure it out, right? Towards the end of last season, it seemed like it was becoming a bit more solidified. Talk a little bit about where you think you fit in that system.
Yeah, I think, you know, anytime a coach takes over from someone who had just won the league and the success that they've had, they've got immense pressure over them, right? Especially when you have your own style, you have your own formation and how you want to, you know, plan things moving forward, people are always going to look at it differently because they think what was done before is already working. But we need to realize it's a different coach, of course. So I do think, you know, the Dutch, they're slightly more structured, more, I don't want to say defensive, but they're more focused on, like, when they don't have possession of the ball, right? How they set up, how they can press, how they can drop, how they can, you know, make slide across and shift and close gaps. So the formation and the style of play that he implemented maybe took a while for players to understand. I mean, I wasn't there when he first took over, so I don't really understand the ins and outs of it, of what was going on during that time. But no, I think like anything, you need time in order to implement what you want to implement and for people to understand. And I think he's shown that, and the players have shown that they were able to understand and, you know, prove that they can have success with this formation and the style that they're playing. I mean, we won the Campeones Cup, the Open Cup. We went to the Eastern Conference Final. So I you know, count it as a successful season, to be honest. But they're Atlanta for a reason. You know, they want to win everything. And that's amazing, of course. But in terms of how I fit in, it's, you know, we want to play kind of a two holding midfielders, let's say, and, you know, I'll be one of those. A coach prefers maybe one, like a destroyer or something like that, and that's the kind of the style that I fit. But of course, you know, I've got great players in my position, Emerson Hyman, Eric Remedy, Jeff Lewinowitz, that I've got to compete alongside. But no, I think, you know, if I do, well, opportunities will come, of course, and it's just about, you know, taking your chances so you can solidify yourself in that lineup.
Yeah, nice. And we know that the culture for Atlanta United is one, incredibly diverse, but also very Hispanic and very Latino. I don't remember the exact roster that you were on in Chicago, but I'm sure it was very similar. I know Vlaco also spoke Spanish. How's your Spanish, Mo? That's my main question.
That's where you're coming at, huh? It's not as great as
you. Are you drinking mate now with your Yorkshire pudding?
Mate. You know what? The guys in the locker room, they're just sitting in like a big circle and they have their mate and they just keep passing it around and enjoy a conversation. It looks fun, but I don't really know what they're talking about. That's the issue. So I can't really join in, you know? But in terms of my Spanish, it's, you know, I understand more than I speak. I'll say that.
Okay.
But we were actually taking Spanish classes just before the whole, you know, virus, you know, came out. There was a lot of guys in that class, of course. Everybody's willing to learn, willing to, you know, be able to use that information and be able to communicate with some players, because not all, like, the Latinos know how to speak English, of course. So we have to adapt a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. They shouldn't have to either, okay, Mo? You adapt to us, okay? Yeah.
We speak the perfect English, but not everyone has to speak the perfect English. So stupid wearing an England shirt.
Exactly. You need to, if you're not going to speak real, get that one off.
I'm wearing three lions. You know, I almost got murdered. I'm half Uruguayan. I went to the Uruguay versus England match where Luis Suarez scored twice. Yeah. And on the way in, I didn't know my buddy invited me to an all-England bar. And on the way in, I walk in, it's a sea of red and white and blue shirts. And I was like, oh, God. And everyone just looks up at me because I'm wearing a Uruguay kit. And I go, yo, did you know Pete is outside? And everyone's, and my buddy goes, please don't. I go, yeah, they heard three lions were going to get slaughtered tonight. People were throwing beer at me. It was insane.
I'm surprised it came out the bar safe, to be honest. You know,
dude, I took a couple elbows.
Passionate. They're passionate, man.
Yeah. I took a couple elbows during that match for sure. I'm like, where'd that come from?
All right, we did it. We did it again. Completed another incredible episode. Thank you, Mo Adams.
We're so
Adams.
Good at this, huh? Thanks
so much. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my God. Clearly, this trio just absolutely crushed it. So thank you, Mo Adams, again for joining us. Mo, is there anything you want to plug or your social media, anything you want to say before we go?
Yeah, of course, you know, it's a tough time for everybody. I just want to, you know, tell people to stay safe, practice social distancing, of course. You know, we're finally seeing, you know, things turn around for the better. So continue to do that and everything will get back to normal. Shout out to all the health workers, the NHS, of course.
Let's go.
We're very thankful for what you guys do and you make our jobs a whole lot easier. So we appreciate that. In terms of social media, Twitter and Instagram _Mo Adams. So give me a follow and check what I do.
All right.
And look out for the Definitely Not Human Trafficking with Mo Adams Incorporated.
Exactly.
Yes.
That way your name is on it.
Yes. If you, LLC.
Very limited liability corporation.
Okay. So Mo, we always end the show as we normally do. So again, thank you for joining us. So for Mo Adams, my name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerreros.
And together, what are we?
The Cooligans!
Well done, brother.